Senator Javits, should Secretary of State Kissinger go along with Vietnam?
Senator Javits, will American Vietnam policy have an impact on Middle East policy?
Senator Javits, now that we can concentrate on the economy and unemployment, will they get worse?
Welcome once again to Capitol Cloakroom, Senator Javits. The senior Republican from the state of New York, beginning his fourth term in the Senate, needs little introduction to our listeners. I will tell them only that you are a member of the Foreign Relations, the Government Operations, the Labor and Public Welfare Committees of the Senate, the Select Committee on Small Business, and the Joint Economic Committee. And that information appears to clear the way for a wide range of questions. To begin with, Senator Javits, after the failure to win agreement on a Sinai withdrawal in the Middle East, the U.S. began a reassessment of Middle Eastern policy. Now, after the fall of Saigon, the U.S. has begun looking for a new Asian policy. And the question might be, should that search go on under the same Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, or should he go?
I don't think Henry Kissinger should go. I believe he should stay because he has invaluable experience now, having had some successes, some failures, a very intimate acquaintance with the dramatis personae, that is, the people involved in the Middle East, especially President Sadat and President Assad and the leaders of Israel, Prime Minister Rabin. And I believe that the standing he's gained in the world has made him one of the most prestigious secretaries of state we've ever had. Therefore, this would be, in my judgment, the wrong time to let him go. Indeed, I believe that's very heavy sentiment in the Congress, and the greatest danger of his going is his own desire to be shed of the grave responsibilities which he's charged with.
Senator Javits, what about our policy now towards countries like Thailand and that area of the world? What do we do now? Is there a reevaluation of how far we go? We've been asked, evidently, that we'll have to take our bases out of a lot of those areas. Do you feel our policy in that part of the world should be now?
I feel that, interestingly enough, it's a hard name to invoke. The Nixon Doctrine now becomes more pertinent than ever. That is, that we will help those who help themselves, and that we will not utilize American troops in the process, except where we have mutual defense agreements. As, for example, where we have one with Japan, we have one with South Korea, with the Philippines, with Australia and New Zealand, and also that we will cultivate assiduously regional organization. There is a regional organization in Asia. It is a weak one, but there is one. And finally, that we will cooperate intensively in the self-help and mutual cooperation which comes from trying to accelerate development in developing countries, and I think we'll give some help with reconstruction in South Vietnam and help the refugees who are the victims of the Vietnamese War, wherever they may be. That, I think, is going to be the outline of our policy. Interestingly enough, the question is raised whether America's commitments are now considered invalid by other countries. I have not found it so. I've been through Europe and into the Middle East. The Vietnamese conflict is regarded for what we regard it as a very serious miscalculation or blunder by the United States, and with very tragic results. But great nations, like individuals, occasionally make a very serious mistake. This was a very, very bad one. But that doesn't mean that we are ceasing to be the great country that we are and as meaningful to the world as we are.
Senator Javits, one portion of the Nixon Doctrine, helping people help themselves, creates serious questions. We were told that the South Vietnamese were helping themselves. What about Japan and her military posture?
Well, now let me come first to South Vietnam. The serious blunder there was that we did not take notice of the fact that South Vietnam was not building up the capacity to help itself because Thieu did not have the people behind him. That was the fatal error. And we never recognized that as the decisive factor and therefore should have pulled out years before we did.
Were we misled?
I believe we miscalculated. I don't think we in the Congress did. For myself, I was against this war beginning on a precise date when I declared against it, February 12, 1967. But apparently the executive department, even under successive presidents, did. And as to Japan, we did not wish Japan to engage in armament. That's why we made a mutual defense agreement with her. And so we have an obligation there which stands in the place of what they might have been able to do if they had been free to rearm themselves.
Do you think Ambassador Martin misjudged the situation in the last months that he was there?
Well, I think Ambassador Martin was a man who went with almost a missionary zeal to single-handedly keep the South Vietnamese government alive and American participation in helping them alive. That's understandable, but hardly very good policy. And there was a very grave question when he was confirmed for that post. There are a number of officials who were kind of an old boy network for Southeast Asia. One of them failed of confirmation for a high State Department job for that very reason. And we weren't too wise. There's nothing wrong with Graham Martin as an individual with a passion and a conscience and as a competent Foreign Service officer. But the question is, was there the necessary objectivity in this situation? And that, of course, we'll be finding out about, because it's a very important lesson to learn. So I don't want to say anything that derogates from the man's ability or his character, except that we knew what we were getting when we sent him there, a man passionately devoted to keeping Thieu in office and maintaining the South Vietnamese resistance and the United States participation in it.
We keep hearing from administration spokesmen that this is no time for recrimination. Some could interpret that as saying that there is something to recriminate about, and we'll be hearing about it later, say, during the political year. Do you think there is? Is the Congress at fault for Vietnam?
I think the Congress can only be faulted for Vietnam because it failed to pull the plug sooner. After all, finally, in 72 and 3, we put our foot down and said no more money. And that really had made the president have to end it. There was no other way. But I think the fault there is very small compared to the fault in the executive department. And we've talked a lot about a succession of presidents who were involved, beginning with President Kennedy. But I think the main responsibility was in Lyndon Johnson. He made a serious miscalculation. He thought that this was a way in which to frustrate the new communist thrust on the world, to defeat what was called the War of National Liberation, a combination of civil war and external aggression, which was mounted in South Vietnam. And it just couldn't be done unless you had the support of the people who were the ones that had to do it. And that Lyndon Johnson never calculated and didn't count the cost, piled hundreds of $150 billion in there, tremendous amounts of manpower, swept under the rug the cost so the American people wouldn't become alarmed, really just didn't take account of the cost as one must in war, and we have paid a terrible price for it. Again, he did it out of the highest patriotic motives. One can't say anything else, nothing venal about it, nothing that benefited him. But it was very, very wrong. And those of us, and I include all of us, because whether you vote yay or nay, you still have a collective responsibility. Who failed to perceive it in time have a responsibility to account to the country for what we did.
Senator, how can this administration in good conscience ask that there not be recriminations when thousands of American lives were lost, when billions of dollars went down the drain? There have been recriminations in this country for lesser things.
When you say recriminations, or when the president says recriminations, what he means is not that we will not hold an inquest over what happened in Vietnam. We must, in order to learn from it. What he means is that Americans won't hate each other, that people will not topple from their position with the American people by virtue of the attacks on them and waving the bloody shirt, etc. That's what he means, and I agree with him in that. Now, as to our losses, which is probably the most deeply moving part of this whole experience, over 50,000 killed, several hundred thousand wounded. We have got to understand, again, that, and there's no condoning it and there's no excusing it, but we have got to understand that a great nation, in order to hang together, and that's what keeps us where we are. Lincoln demonstrated that well over 100 years ago. may sometimes have to participate in a mistake where that seems to be the national will and the national law in order to show that the nation will not fall apart because individuals may disagree with its policy. Now, this is a very hard thing for a bereaved family to accept. Nonetheless, it's the truth. It's the fact. Suppose many, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of young men had refused to serve. That would bring our country down, not just because of Vietnam, but bring us down as a country. You can't run a country that way. So I hope these families will take some solace from the fact that patriotism is a quality that obtains in good and bad seasons, and this was an abysmally bad season.
Senator Javits, you mentioned earlier reconstruction of South Vietnam. How is that done? Through whom is it done? What I mean, South Vietnam will soon be all in one. Do we give that money that is before the Congress right now? How do you see that?
So far, we've only gone to the extent, Maria, of providing money for the victims of the Vietnamese war. In other words, wherever they are, they need to be fed and housed and kept from starvation and disease, period. That's all as far as we've gone. As to Reconstruction, it is a fact that we did participate in a war which wreaked enormous destruction on South Vietnam and North Vietnam, for that matter, but I don't feel, I agree with Kissinger, I don't feel that we ought to do anything there for reasons of there having been the enemy in this thing and very intransigent in terms of trying to settle it, etc. But in South Vietnam, the question is open in my mind as to what we really owe in terms of the individual peasant whose home was burned by napalm, let us say, just to be very direct about it. We'll have to assess that as a nation, and the door must be kept open for that assessment. It's still his home, whether he lives under a communist dictatorship or whether he lived under the Thieu dictatorship. And so we may have some hand, perhaps through voluntary agencies or international agencies or in some kind of a collective action, multi-nation action, to help with that problem. That's my instinct, but as I say, when I said what I did, it was just to keep the door open.
Well, the Secretary says the major burden should be borne by the people who furnish the weapons on the other side.
There's no question about their guilt in the matter, who furnished the weapons for the aggression.
The Russians and the Chinese.
The Russians and the Chinese, exactly. What will come of that, I don't know. All that I believe is that we should keep our minds open. Right now, as I say, the bill, which is the current one, provides $150 million for humanitarian relief, which must go through international and voluntary agencies like the Church World Service and many others. $177 is available for the evacuation. Well, a good deal of that has undoubtedly been spent, and also for humanitarian relief from the U.S. government itself or through international organizations. Now, that's the way it sets now, and that's all there is until we give it another think.
Senator Javits, what about the refugees? Do you foresee terrible problems in assimilating them into our country?
I don't at all. There are 55,000. That's an absolute drop in the bucket, again, in a situation in which these people were friendly to us and worked with us at the risk of their very lives. And I know we have difficult problems and difficult employment problems, and et cetera. I'm deeply, deeply imbued with that. But life goes on. And there's still, say, 90% of the American people are employed or more. And we simply cannot forego as small a matter as this. Remember, we took 600,000 refugees from Cuba. We took, if memory serves me correctly, about 380,000 displaced persons from Europe. We took Hungarian freedom fighters. That's the tradition of this country. You tighten your belt and you do what's essential. And I believe this is really essential.
Do you think that yesterday, evidently, when there was earlier this week, when there was a report that they were going into a city in Florida, there was great public indignation, and the people didn't seem to take that all-American attitude that you've just described.
I think that those communities are only hurting themselves the most, and obviously Vietnamese are not going to be forced on any community and needn't be. There are plenty of communities in this country which will gladly receive them, and that's been shown by the orphans situation, the orphans airlift. And I believe there's enough heart in America, give or take the usual 10% who don't feel that way, to deal with a 55,000 Vietnamese in a population of 220 million.
Senator Javits, will American Vietnam policy have an impact on Middle East policy?
I think it will not have an impact on changing that policy. I think we will still maintain our position of seeing to the survival and national integrity, etc., of Israel. And doing our utmost to mediate, as a friend of both sides, the Middle East struggle. But I believe it sobers us as to our commitments. We will want a very precise view of our commitments, and I think we will take comfort from the fact that in Israel, unlike Vietnam, you have a very reliable people, indeed a heroic people, who are well able to and passionately willed to defend their own security and their own freedom. And I believe that the unstable situation in the Middle East, and as including for at least a few years, it's sitting astride of the oil the world needs so urgently, is likely rather to fortify the commitments which are sound commitments like that one, rather than to denigrate them. In short, we will be choosing our more advantageous commitments against our less advantageous commitment. I think that's the lesson of Vietnam.
But what about the possible impact of American public opinion? What if American public opinion no longer supports our policy in the Middle East and our policy towards Israel?
I don't see that happening. I see, on the contrary, no erosion in the Congress and no erosion in the country. And I believe that the American people feel that this is a very sound policy. Certainly they're showing it by the surveys and by the attitude of their legislators, and that they are not shaken in it.
Senator Javits, you mentioned that you think that we ought to have a, I can't think of the exact word you use, but a defined, clear-cut policy just as to exactly what our commitments are in the Middle East. Will you try to get some sort of public definition and refinement of that policy now from the administration?
Well, I don't think we need it from the administration, Maria, exclusively. I think we have to make it ourselves. I think the new stance of the Congress respecting foreign policy is that we're equal partners. We showed that in respect of our insistence on the president having authority from the Congress before using the armed forces of the United States to evacuate Vietnamese, which he has no right to do under the Constitution.
He never got that authority.
He will, in my judgment, in some form, get it ratified by the Congress. When you say he never got it, never got it technically.
Right.
But both houses passed bills giving it to him, and the Senate even approved such a conference report. And I believe that we will ratify in order to demonstrate that we do have that check and balance on him. But in my judgment, we too have to do a reassessment on the Middle East in terms of how the Congress feels about it, and I'm confident we will. Laid side by side with that of the president, it will make American policy, and that's the way it ought to be.
Senator, going on to another subject, now that we can concentrate on the economy and unemployment, will they get worse? And I'm asking that in sort of a facetious way, but we seem to start to mess around with things. And in the last few months, we've almost ignored that problem in this country. Now, what do you foresee in the near future about the economy and about the unemployment situation?
Well, one, I'm glad we've gotten through with the obsession of Vietnam. That's it. That's ended. And in my judgment, the economy and unemployment will both be more advantageously handled than before. As to the economy, I see an improvement in this way. There's really no place we've got to go but up. Our industrial plants being used only to the extent of 70% of capacity now. That's a big margin for improvement. And the our inventories in American business have been run down very considerably and will have to be replenished. In addition, the public does not seem to show a diminution in its interest in consumption. In short, that the demand factor continues relatively strong. Also, Americans are beginning to save quite adequately. And if the Federal Reserve Board gives us a money policy which is adapted to that kind of attitude, then I think we could well pull out of this recession by about the middle of 76. As to unemployment, that's a deep structural problem in the United States because we've shown that we could even have prosperity and unacceptable unemployment, and people like myself are doing their utmost to deal with it now and will be aided by the fact that we're out of Vietnam.
You say we might pull out by the middle of 1976. The Treasury Secretary said this week that the recession is three-quarters over.
Well,
don't seem to agree with him.
Still leaves a quarter, doesn't it?
He's talking about the middle of 1975.
I understand. Whether you make it a quarter or a half, I think we're going to begin to see major improvement the middle of this year. My feeling about how fast it can be may differ from his, because I think we've got to emphasize productivity and the workers' interest in the job and the supply of the necessary capital, even if necessary through government for housing, etc., to really get it on the road. It isn't going to be done with mirrors, and that's where the Secretary of Treasury and I may disagree.
Senator, we're not out of the pit yet, some businessmen and economists are saying that we're going to have another boom and bust.
Well, that could be if we don't correct the structural deficiencies which can give us inflation and unemployment and a seeming prosperity all at one time. And that's going to be what people like myself must direct ourselves to doing.
Well, is it time to stop some of the recession-fighting spending and start fighting inflation again?
I don't think yet. When you have this unused margin of industrial capacity, but we've got to be vigilant not to be overtaken by inflation either. Right now, our problem is to stimulate demand and stimulate the use of our idle resources.
In our final 20 seconds, Senator Javits, do you feel that Gerald Ford will be a candidate for election in 1976?
I do. It's the logic of the situation, and I think you'll see a Ford-Rockefeller ticket, and I believe, notwithstanding the murmurings of the ultra-conservatives, the Republican Party will back them both.
Thank you very much, Senator Javits, for being with us on Capitol Cloakroom.